Hey everyone, welcome back to the Film Fund Podcast. I'm your host, founder and executive producer at the Film Fund, Thomas Verity. I'm also an award-winning filmmaker, producer, and film festival judge. I started the Film Fund to give filmmakers an easier, alternative way to get their film funded. Instead of working on a screenplay, crowdfunding campaign, or grant application, you write one sentence pitching your film for a chance to receive up to $10,000 and other prizes to make it. There's less than 1 week left in our Winter 2021 Narrative and Documentary Contest, so don't forget to submit your pitch. That deadline is March 30th, 2021. There are no extensions this time. A lot of the time, you'll see an email in our previous contest where it says, oh, deadline extended. We're not going to do that this time. So make sure to get your submission in on time. Check us out at thefilmfund.co to enter your one-sentence pitch for a chance to win up to $10,000 to make your film. And we want to remind listeners that contests happen regularly. So if you're listening at a later date, check the website at thefilmfund.co for the most up-to-date information. Today, we have Darren Miller, producer of the Film Fund winning film, Sunday Dinner, also head of programming at Funny or Die. Darren, thank you so much for coming back on the show. He's our second returning guest. Last week we had Kevin Mead, also from Sunday Dinner. Darren, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. A little reminder of who you are, what you do.
Sure. I do a little bit of everything. I write, I produce. I produce Sunday Dinner with Kevin and Don. And I work at Funny or Die, where I help run the digital side of their business and make stuff there as well. And then I have a production company on my own where I get to make short films every now and again.
That's awesome. And so through that production company, it's Big Mischief, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, that's what you produced Sunday Dinner through?
Yes, yes.
Okay. In, I've been asking all the Sunday Dinner guys to give me a little overview of Sunday Dinner. To you, what is Sunday Dinner about and what's going on?
To me, Sunday Dinner is, I'll try to explain it in a way that isn't the same log line everyone else gives. a man is coming out as vegan to his very traditional Italian-American family at a dinner that is very important to them, but it's really a compression and distillation of the conflict between progress and tradition in a family. And I think it does a really, when I got the script from Don, it felt like something that does a really good job of sort of like getting to the very root of a lot of problems and struggles and really funny experiences that people have. It really kind of backtracks the whole thing to like, well, this is really where things get off track and where change happens because of this, because, you know, a family, your family lineage sort of steers you in a certain direction, and then you start thinking, well, what about something else? But that's not so easy to do. So that was the part of it that really felt like made it something more than just like a funny dinner, which it also is. And there was a lot to sink my teeth into.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you brought up that theme, really, I guess, of progress and tradition in a family, those things and how they kind of come to a head with this, because we have pretty much talked about it as well, we've only really had Kevin delve into it in a deep dive, but he focused a lot from a directing standpoint on, you know, camera angles and coverage and what he was trying to achieve with that type of family. But it's interesting to see really what it boils down to. It's not just the relationships between the characters, it's also tradition in a family and how that maybe comes to a head. Something that's super interesting. And where can we watch it? You can obviously watch it on the Film Fund's website, but Film there are also some other exciting places.
Yeah, we're trying to, I mean, we're just trying to put it out in as many places as possible and make it as easy for people as we can. But yeah, the Film Fund's website, the Omeletto YouTube channel, the Big Mischief, there's a Big Mischief Vimeo and YouTube. Hoping to keep increasing that as well. We can get into distribution strategies if you want later, but
yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask about the experience with that online distribution strategy because of COVID and what that experience has been like for you.
Sure. Well, we still went through this sort of like virtual festival run. I think the I think maybe the most common thing that people do with short films is kind of like let it have a festival run before releasing it to the public, which is also interesting because I feel like that's starting to change a little bit because the reason you do that is because a lot of festivals won't shorts won't be eligible if it's already been publicly screened. And I think now that they're all virtual and things are changing a little bit, I think the nature of distribution is changing. That might become more lenient, so you might see a lot more. It's already pretty common for festivals to not really care too much about that. So I'm
Yeah, I know
interested to see how
Sundance
that changes.
allows online.
Right. A lot of the big ones do. So once we could tell that the festival run was starting to get sort of slow down, we knew that we were going to release it with you guys, because that was all part of our plan. But we thought, like, we want this to be. There's a theory, if you're familiar with Short of the Week, it's like a short film curation website that's really great. But there's an old blog post that they've had called the like Be Everywhere All at Once
Yep, we
theory.
actually linked to that in our FAQ on the Film Fund's website because we want to promote
Great.
that strategy as well. But
Yeah,
for our
and
listeners who might not be familiar with it, let's go through it,
sure.
if you don't mind.
So they not only lay out this very convincing argument for why you should really just put the short everywhere as many different places as possible, but they back it up with numbers and they kind of justify it and they say, look, here are some statistics that show the major reason why filmmakers make short films is not to monetize them necessarily in the end or maintain exclusive ownership or anything like that, or build a library. It's to get exposure. And so if you want to maximize exposure, you need to maximize exposure, like literally. So I think there are other points of view. Maybe the easiest way to explain it is to explain the other point of view, which is like put it in one place and then organize all of your efforts around getting as many people as possible to that one destination, right? And the reason why this other theory clicked with me so much is that, I mean, my whole career, I've sort of straddled the line between comedy and tech. And a lot of my work at Funny or Die has had to do with distribution. And one of the biggest things I've learned is that audiences on many different platforms and all different areas of the internet are somewhat siloed. And people are where they are, and it's your job to meet them where they are and give them something to watch where they are. And not only is that better for them, but it's also a lot easier than accomplishing, like, convincing them to leave where they are comfortable and go to this new place. So the argument that you want to put everything everywhere, sort of, it means don't deal with exclusivity. It means, and I think a lot of people have been very friendly about this.
Exclusivity meaning if like we don't do this, but if the Film Fund were to say, oh, it has to only be on our YouTube page, it can't be anywhere else. Is that what you mean by exclusivity? Something like that?
If you put it somewhere, whoever you're working with, whatever your distribution partner on that might be, if they say like, yeah, we'd love it, but you can't put it anywhere else if you put it here. And this theory is not the be all end all. So if that's your opportunity, you should weigh that and decide if that's worthwhile to you. It might be. I mean, if you guys had done that, I don't think we would have been like, no, we probably would have. You guys have provided us a lot more support, so there's a lot more coming in on that end of the equation there than like some random YouTube channel. But yeah, I think oh, someone's trying to call me, sorry.
All good.
So you want to basically put it as many places non-exclusively as possible and not be too precious about maximizing the particular destination that you think will give you the best payoff. And I think every place that you can put a short film really has its own advantages that you want to be able to capitalize on. I mean, different YouTube is like this vast ocean of content that people go there looking for all kinds of different things. That's totally different than somewhere like Vimeo that might more traditionally be people looking for film, or some other channel that is like more dedicated to short films, or something that's more dedicated to comedy. So I think you're going to find very different audiences, and it's going to connect with people in a lot of different ways. And that's something that's also been important to me to really learn over the years, is that your job isn't done when you've just, the same way your job isn't done when you've just written something good, you have to execute. Your job isn't done when the thing is done either. You have to make sure that it actually lands with people in the way that is intended. I think you can kind of, as a producer, I take it seriously that you can kind of ruin all the hard work that everyone else has put into this if you kind of like botch the whole thing on the 1 yard line.
Yeah, I mean, and then talking about it landing with audiences, it goes right into the next question I wanted to ask you about the release on Unbleto, and looking at those YouTube comments, Kevin Mead, the director, had likened those comments to watching people's faces in a theater and seeing their reactions, but you're actually getting a little bit more than that because you're able to read the comments and actually see how they're responding to the film, what their actual thoughts are. What was that experience like for you, having it released online and seeing that response?
That was great. I'm really glad that we were able to put it up somewhere that there was sort of like a large audience that kind of thing can trickle in. I think that's, like I said, every place has its own advantages. That happens to be that one, that place's big advantage. So it was really great after going on a virtual festival run that didn't have too much of that. And that's one of the biggest advantages of being in a festival, is you get to see how it lands with people in real time. So it really helped make up for that loss, so to speak. And it was great to see all the different kinds of reactions. I think you make a great point that, you know, you might get a laugh in a theater, but here is like, let me explain to you why I laughed.
Right.
Which is really cool. So yeah, not only were there a lot of comments on the YouTube video, but we noticed a few people like threw it up on Reddit, and there were a few Reddit threads going of people.
Oh, that's awesome.
Who were like were fans of the actors from other stuff that they've seen them in, or fans of other things that they're involved in. And so they were like, well, check out this short that I think you guys would enjoy. So it was nice to sort of both participate and watch Kevin and Don participate in answering like legitimate questions that people have, just showing that people, it's one thing to see that a lot of people, you know, click the like button, but it's another thing to be like, I'm actually interested. I want to talk to you guys about this.
Right. It goes a level deeper.
Yeah. And so that was really gratifying. And I think that it also, I think a big part of a producer's job is to sort of be a cheerleader for the other creatives in the room. And so a lot of the encouragement and the work that I did along the way to just be like, no, you guys, just trust Don and Kevin and everyone else who's working on it, and be like, no, I think you guys are doing the right thing here. This is the right move. Keep going. It's nice to see that pay off and be like validated.
And speaking of those other team members, how did you get involved with Sunday Dinner again? What was that story like?
Don sent me and a former director the script, and was like, he had already won the Film Fund contest.
Okay.
So he came to me with a great deal. He was like, I've got some money and I've got a script. And that's awesome. I already knew, we were already friends. We had met from the Upper Citizens Brigade Theater in New York when we both lived there, and did, we both wrote and performed comedy there. So I knew it was a fantastic script. I knew there was like some financial backing already, not to mention the credibility that the Film Fund brings. And it was Don, who I already knew, like, I was just a huge fan of his work and his approach, his values. He's fantastic. So he was like, I need to get this thing made. I've been trying to get this thing made a lot of different ways. And I kind of took it and ran with it. Once that other director got another gig and wasn't able to make it work, I knew right away that Kevin was the perfect person to jump on board. That was pretty seamless. But looking at the script,
Kevin from college, right?
Yeah, Kevin and I go way back. We met first day of college, and you know, joined the comedy group at GW together, and have been. That was sort of how we both got into filmmaking. Is that comedy group at the time. This was like the very beginning of YouTube, I would say. YouTube like barely existed at the time, if it existed. But the comedy group we were in college did video. It was not very common at that point for comedy groups to do that, and so we kind of made a lot of terrible comedy videos as a way to teach ourselves how to do this. And that was great. But I knew Kevin was perfect for this, not just because he's sort of my go-to person to work with for anything anyway, but I knew the script would resonate with him particularly well too, and it plays to his strengths as well. But for me, looking at the script, I had come off a few projects just before then that really had a lot of moving parts, and making such a small budget work on my own with all those moving parts was really difficult. And I was like feeling spread really thin. And I remember getting this script and knowing that like the budget had already, we already had some of the budget taken care of. And it's one room, it's in real time. And I was thinking, I can really sink my teeth into this. I can bring Nate, another great producer I know, on board, and we can just like completely knock this out of the park. This feels like a huge challenge, but I think I could pull it off if I get the right people involved, and especially with the people who are already involved. So it, I think it was good timing for me to know that kind of where I was in terms of like what I think I could do, and make sure that I can deliver for Don in the way that he's looking for.
And what were some of those challenges that you sunk your teeth into with the project? I know the camera broke on the day of filming, besides that.
Yeah, I mean, in retrospect, that barely even counts, just because it was like you don't almost the anticipation of a problem is more work to deal with than just like making something, fixing something on the fly. I think this project had, I mentioned the director dropped. We also had a DP drop. We had people who were very into the project, and just like we happened to know great people who, unfortunately, they get gigs that like they can't pass up, and we wouldn't want them to. So that happened a number of times with people, and we kind of like swung for the fences with cast and got most of the cast that we went to was like on board very easily, but there was a couple of pieces of the puzzle that were like we had to like really maneuver dates or availability or travel to make work. I'm trying to think of a good example. Mike Antonucci, who you'd recognize in the short from his big tomato sauce speech. But he actually lives in New York, and he
You
was
guys
someone
flew him
that
out?
we didn't he the timing happened to work out that he was going to be in town
Got
for
it. Yeah, because
something
I don't
else.
remember that going through the. I go through
No.
for the listeners out there. I go through all the expense reports that the winners submit. I was like, I don't remember a plane ticket or lodging
Yeah,
or.
we would have chosen different expenses. I think I would have been like, Tom's gonna look at this and be like, maybe you guys shouldn't have spent money on a plane
Hotel
ticket.
bar.
So we were like, oh my God, I think he could do this. We can make this work. So we found a way to make that work too. So that was really fun. Fun. Yeah, it was. What are some other challenges? The location was a challenge. That was fun. This is like, it doesn't have to take place in Jersey, but there's like a New Jersey, at least East Coast kind of feel to
For sure, yeah.
this family. And we really wanted to stay true to like, this is a somewhat autobiographical story for Don. Not like it all happened exactly this way or the exact same thing happened, but tradition is such a huge part of it. So we wanted to stay true to the details. Like, details really mattered a lot in this story. So We were trying to find locations within our budget in LA that kind of work for that, and it was really difficult. I ended up being in an apartment search of my own at the same time. So I was looking for house locations for this short at the same time I was looking for house locations to
Did
live
you just
in.
combine them and be like, okay, I'm just gonna
And
pick an apartment
I
that's
did. I
hysterical.
was like, look, this isn't the perfect location, but I think it could work.
I could
And
live here
I'm going,
also.
yeah. Well, and like my wife and I are going to look at this place. We might rent it. So we looked at it and we were like, this is a great, it kind of works for both. And I convinced my wife to let us
That's hysterical.
sneak in there in the like 1 weekend between us starting the lease and moving in.
Wow.
So it was completely unfurnished. It was like a completely empty apartment house that we had not moved into yet, and I met my neighbors with them being annoyed with me day one.
Annoyed because of the equipment you brought in, or?
Yeah, well, we made we were making I was I think I'm always, as a producer, a little bit kind of like a like an anxious party host, trying to make sure
Okay.
everyone's got what they need and everything.
Right.
But this was like, I was literally hosting people in my house. So, yeah, I remember actually introducing myself to my next door neighbor as he was kind of eyeing us, like unloading stuff from the truck
Yeah.
and being like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Which I don't think anyone was like, really, like, we weren't doing anything that's like so obnoxious, but I can
Not like you're
imagine that
throwing a
for a
big party
neighbor,
or
it's like,
anything.
yeah, I can imagine it's like, is this what it's going to be like every day now? Like, who are these people? Yeah, so that was tough, but we found a creative solution. We broke a camera, which was like such a crazy fluke. There were all these people on set that have been, I mean, very, very experienced people that were like, this has never happened to me before.
It
I
just
have no
stopped
idea.
working. Nobody like
Yeah, there was some kind
dropped
of
it or.
incompatibility issue with I mean, they were literally compatible, but there was some kind of weird issue with the particular cards we used in that particular version of that camera
What
that,
camera was it again?
man, it was a long time ago. I don't even remember what camera we used for that shoot. I don't know. That's a Kevin or Don question. Oh, it's a Kevin question. I don't want to get it
Okay.
wrong.
Sure, no worries.
Yeah, I would look it up. But yeah, and then after the fact, we talked to a couple of people. They're like, yeah, I guess I've heard of that happening with that camera before, but like, it doesn't happen. It just was bad luck. But that happened. That's what being on set is. Everyone kind of rolled with it, and we
And
had a
you guys
couple
said
hours delay.
you said you were just able to call somebody that you knew from your network and get another camera on set.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing this for a long time. It's interesting, like, at least Kevin and Don and I came up doing more through comedy than short film, but that's like, it's so funny how similar they are. Digital comedy sketches are just short films, just approached a very different way. So we've worked with a bunch of great people over the years to the point where, and then Nate, who came on, our other producer, has been doing a lot of the same projects for years as well. I mean, we all called up five different people and had five different people being like, yeah, we got you. So
That's awesome.
yeah, I mean, we ended up even doing like price comparison on the fly, being like, well, this person can give it to us now for this price, but like, let's
Yeah.
save some money. So that was great.
Pit them against each other for their goodwill.
Yeah. Yeah, so that worked out. We had a delay, of course, but I think that this is one of those examples of like, you make the right call on one thing and it ends up being really helpful on a completely different thing. We really focused on, once we knew all the pieces that were in place to do this, a lot of the people involved in this project were doing it not as a complete favor. We were paying people, but they like really connected to the script. And so we kind of tried to cultivate like a kind of a family vibe on set, and worked with people that we knew approached things in a particular way where not everybody, like, there's always some people on set that are approaching it like, this is just a trade. I don't really care about the script. I don't really care about anyone else involved. And that's
Are you
like, I
talking
have
about cast and crew, or specifically
cast and
more
crew for
crew?
sure.
Cast and crew.
And I have no problem with that whatsoever. I think that's a great way to approach this, if that's how you want to approach it. For this particular project, we really liked that we had the opportunity to work with a lot of people that were like, I actually really care about the story. I care about what we're doing here. I understand the approach, and I'm on board for whatever this ride is. And that ended up having a lot of benefits on set, one of which was something like this happens, and everyone's like, cool, we'll do it, whatever we got to do. I mean, we went overtime a little bit that day, which hit the budget a little bit, but everyone was a trooper. Everyone kind of stayed in there. The cast in particular was like, we approached a lot of the approach for shooting was we had them doing like really long takes because they were so good, they were so off book that we were like, let's just run through these huge chunks. Even people off camera, we had them all there at once doing huge chunks at a time. So they ran through that script like I don't know, 1,000 times. And they were just like, they were cool. They were ready to go as soon as we were back up and running, and everything was good. That they also it also helped that they being in the comedy community, they kind of already knew each other and were already friends.
Got it. Was there any improv on the set, or was it mostly stick to the script? I mean, that's a Kevin question too, I guess, but.
No, there was. I'm trying to think of what made it in to the final cut. We did have a lot of script changes, so I don't remember. I don't remember if the Eat an Impossible Dick or Beyond Dick was
That's
an
my favorite
improv
line. I
line.
bring that up every
Yeah.
Sunday dinner episode we
Okay. Yeah, I
have.
think it's my favorite line too. I can't remember if that was in the script or not. There was a lot of great improv that happened on set. I just don't remember which is what ended up making it in and which was like, oh yeah, they just were doing because it was such a great script.
Yeah. Well,
We
I was going to
definitely
say
made
that
sure
shows
to
how
do
good the script
both.
is too. If you don't even remember what was written and what was improv, it just, I mean,
Right.
the actors had such a sense of what the story was about already. They could just seamlessly improvise something.
Yeah. And I mean, there was so much happening. I think the most frustrating part of the process for me was watching stuff in post that was just such great performances that like we couldn't use. I mean, there was so much great off-camera stuff that was happening. There was so much great just reactions. That was such a big thing that I remember we were talking about a lot in pre-production that was like, let's not neglect stuff that isn't in the script. There's a lot of reading between the lines going on in this story.
And
There's
just
a lot of
clarification for some listeners out there, what do you mean by off-camera stuff? That was new.
so just in terms of coverage, well, I guess I meant two things by it. One is literally off camera, like we didn't capture the performance at all, but if the cameras, if you're shooting a close up on one character for a scene and the other actor is across the table from them, still giving a performance. I mean, different people have different approaches to something like this. Some people kind of take a step back and don't dial it in 100% and make sure that the advantage of that is you make sure the person who's on camera like is really doing, really getting their space to give their full performance. And then I think we kind of leaned in the other direction with some of these actors, more their choice, I think, than anything else, to a lot of times give like 100% great performance, even though the camera isn't on them, but it really encourages the other actor to give like real reactions. And so I remember watching a lot of that. And then the other thing is, you're getting coverage. So, I mean, in the end, you end up with a big menu of options in post of like, do we cut to someone listening to this line or do we cut to the person saying the line? We have both. That was a big part of post was just was making those choices to decide how we wanted to tell the story. Kevin's big on telling the story visually through character point of view. So I think we put a lot of effort into not only telling the story in a very like obvious and like a surface level way, but also like telling the story of each relationship at, of the table as they clock what they're seeing, as they react, and as they either get upset with each other or warm up to each other or finally understand something about each other. And so there's a lot of stories being told at once there. We wanted to get the right balance.
Got it. Thank you for clarifying that for me. For us, I guess, as I speak to our thousands and thousands of listeners out there. We actually do have, I think, a few thousand total. Tom's putting together the analytics. Anyway, tangent aside, talk to me about Funny or Die. What's it like to work there?
Sure. I don't know how to answer this question. It's a lot of fun. I mean, I don't know how deep I should get into like doing digital video in the last 10 years or so is a real roller coaster on the internet. It's a really interesting balance to figure out how to support the artists who work there every day with you and other people who might want to use Funny or Die as a playground or a platform to tell to put the best comedy out there that we possibly can, and also like have a successful business. The best way to do that has changed like so many times over the last 10 years. So that's been a wild ride to ride those waves and adjust the way that we approach what we make and why we make it and who we make it with to fit that sort of ever-changing balance.
And when you talk about ever-changing, do you mean like different social media platforms like TikTok coming out versus like Instagram or Facebook being the dominant player in video distribution?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I can speak to just Funny or Die's experience. Funny or Die used to have a full video platform with their own video player, and anyone could create a channel and upload their own videos, and it was basically like comedy YouTube. And I think, like I was mentioning before, audiences being kind of siloed where they are, video on social media natively started taking off, and we started noticing, well, like, we've built up all these huge audiences on social, and they're looking for videos there. So we started putting our videos in all these other different places. And so the way that everything kind of naturally evolved was we ended up kind of compressing the whole platform down to just like, we have a website now, and we have it's called Certified Contributor Program, where we invite some of the people that we have really good working relationships with. They still have channels where they can post things, but like we use a YouTube player now as opposed to like our own player. This is getting kind of in the weeds on tech stuff, but
all good. I mean, hey, as an indie filmmaker, we need to know these things.
Yeah.
If we have our own website, do we use our own
UI
and our own WordPress player? Do we use the YouTube player? So, I mean, right. You have to know everything as a filmmaker today.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a way it's Funny or Die kind of embracing the be everywhere all at once idea.
Okay.
And saying like, let's not be precious and try to get everyone to come to our platform and our site and not let our Facebook followers see our stuff, because they'd rather hang out on Facebook than our website, which is fine. Let's put our stuff in as many places as we can. So that's as far as the platforms go, that's been an interesting evolution to kind of ride. And I think not only each destination, like I was saying before, with like any place, any outlet that you can put a short film with, the distribution partner has different advantages, but different platforms, and this is one of the biggest things I've learned over the years, the context with which your audience watches your thing is so important. And that has changed so much. When almost all of our audience was watching our stuff on funnierdie.com, that was people knowing they wanted to go to funnierdie.com, deciding to do that, and saying, I'm here to watch a comedy video. What do you have for me today? What should I watch? They're already in that mindset. It's closer on the spectrum to going to a movie theater, buying a ticket for a specific movie, sitting in darkness and doing nothing but watching it. Like, you really have everyone's attention. Other social media platforms are like a feed-based environment where they're scrolling through and they're not saying, I'm going to go to Facebook to watch a comedy video. They're not saying, I'm going to watch a short film on Facebook. They're just seeing what happens to show up. And if you catch their attention, there's totally different kinds of content that will work in all of those different environments, right? So that's how we've really, I think the evolution of like what we've put out into the world has changed along those lines, where we try to pay attention to what people are looking for and why in the particular environment they're in to sort of serve the right purpose so that we can land with people, so that someone who's scrolling Funny or Die for some quick news hits or Facebook for some quick news hits isn't being shown like, hey, watch this 20-minute film like right now immediately. And if you want to do that, you have to couch it in the right way, you have to frame it in the right way, you have to know what you have and what you want to put out there, and then you have to know how to put it out there in a way that will work based on what people are doing and what they're looking for when they're doing it.
And that is essentially what you do as, I believe your title is head of programming from your LinkedIn profile that I looked at. It might be not accurate.
It's gonna change tomorrow. Today it's interim head of digital. There's a yeah, we're everything's always changing. I've it was funny in particular. I mean, I've been there for 6 or 7 years. I've had half the jobs in the place. So I've done a little bit of everything. I've written, I've produced, I've programmed the YouTube channel, I've run programming. A lot of what I just talked about is a lot of what I do as part of programming. But we're a really, I mean, people would be surprised at how small of a team we are. We're a small and scrappy team of people that all wear a lot of hats and do a lot of different things.
Very cool. Have you ever worked with Will Ferrell or any
Not
other
directly,
famous people?
no. Yeah, some famous people. I think a big part of the allure, this is not, I think Funny or Die a few years ago started making TV, and that's a different, that's, I don't work on that team, but I think the sort of like celebrity part of Funny or Die shifted toward that effort, where a lot of the great celebrity relationships that Funny or Die has have been sort of brought into that sphere, which was the right call, I think, but we're giving them much better opportunities than just like
That's awesome.
A web video. But
And that's got to be interesting how TV is coexisting with digital now, too. It's almost like with these streaming platforms, it is digital in a way on the TV.
yeah, there's been a lot of interesting scenarios where we have chances to make series that are kind of on the borderline. And that's why Funny or Die changes so much, is like different teams are making different things, but like, 3 years from now we might look back and be like, what's the difference between those two projects? Why did we think they were so different? Why did we approach them so differently? I think everyone can kind of see the future and think that like it's all gonna merge in some way at some point. And the struggle that we kind of like look around and witness now is everyone trying to figure out the messy path to that, because you can't just turn on a switch and make it happen. But I mean, I guess the headline is that I, through my work at Funny or Die, I have come to appreciate and understand and sort of respect such a broader and more thorough understanding of the process of creating something and putting it out there. And it's really helpful when you're trying to write something to know if you can shut it out when you need to shut it out. It's helpful to know like what you're gonna need to worry about, in distribution even. And I think because I am also a producer, I like that. I like being able to anticipate things. Some people hate that. Some people are like, I don't want to care about what director is going to pick up this script or how this is going to get made. I just want to like write and write the best way I can. I really like seeing pieces way ahead and knowing how I can incorporate the best path to those situations.
Let's see if you can see ahead and guess my next question here. That was a bad segue. We're gonna roll with it anyway. What?
Well, I
How
can
did
guess.
how did you get the opportunity to work at Funny or Die?
I was moving to LA. Let's see. I had a production company with Kevin and another friend of ours. Actually, the director who was originally going to shoot Sunday Dinner before Kevin was able to jump on board. The three of us had a production company back in New York. And we were a very small independent production company that essentially did production gigs for companies to fund our own original work.
Okay.
So like we were doing this, we were doing live shows, and we were doing other gigs. So like some combination of all of that paid for our work and our rent. And then I started working at well, all three of us in different iterations started working for a YouTube channel called Official Comedy, which was they got some funding to start a comedy focused YouTube channel, and we were brought on board to help make just make all of their comedy sketches essentially with a small group of people there. And that was a job that I had for little over a year, not much. It was like kind of an experiment that didn't work out really. They burned through all their money, and then
Oh, wow.
production stopped. But it was a great experience because that was my first exposure to like, oh, it's not just making the thing. It's also like finding the audience and finding what the audience wants and then delivering in a consistent way over and over and over again. And so, I guess when you're doing comedy in New York, you're always kind of thinking like, at some point, I'm going to have to move to LA. And my wife is from Northern California, so she was always kind of like, as soon as you're ready, I'm ready. So we thought, let's check out LA. We moved here thinking we'd be here for a few months and then come back. But my friend worked at Funny or Die and was like, hey, they're looking for someone to run the YouTube channel, and you just were working at a comedy YouTube channel for a year. So why don't you come and interview? So I interviewed, and we came to LA and realized that we were both employed. Like, my wife's job was like, well, don't leave, you can just work remotely. So we got to LA and realized we were both employed in LA. Well,
That's
so we
awesome.
just stayed instead of going back like we planned. And I've just been
Yeah.
working at Funny or Die ever since. I think I have the kind of the like jack of all trades, master of none mentality where, for better or for worse, I'm genuinely interested in both sides and all different aspects of. I'm really interested in comedy and tech and production and post and distribution, all the like. I just am so I've always just kind of like found ways to be helpful for in the environment that Funny or Die is, where there's a lot of people doing a lot of things, and so I've had a lot of different roles there.
Awesome. What do you have in store for the future? Either Funny or Die or with Big Mischief or anything else?
I've still got for Big Mischief, there's still a couple more shorts that I'm about to put out very soon.
Okay.
So I guess
It's
stay tuned for
exciting.
those. That's exciting. One of them is something I co-directed with a friend, so that's fun. And then Funny or Die, more of the same. We're gonna keep doing what we're doing. And then we'll see what happens next for shorts. I've got when we shot Sunday Dinner, I had a he's now three, a 2-year-old at the time, and I'm we're expecting twins in May.
Oh wow.
So
Congrats.
I might be taking thank you. I might be taking a little bit of a break from the fun side productions, but we'll see.
Very cool. And speaking about just getting projects off the ground. The Film Fund helps people do that. What are some of your favorite things about the Film Fund?
I think you guys do such a great job of providing really straightforward and practical support, not only financially through the contest, but also blog posts, this podcast. I mean, I think you can be at any stage in your career and get something out of all of the work that you guys do to support people doing it on their own. You basically work from the assumption that people don't already have any resources necessarily. And how do you get going with nothing? And it's incredibly valuable. It's really great that you guys are out there. There's not a ton of people out there doing this, and just the practical resources, I think, can really help. I think the biggest hurdle that I think a lot of people deal with is, for me, this was always my biggest thing, was just thinking that there's so much out there that I'm supposed to know, but I don't know yet. And there's like secrets, essentially, that I didn't go to film school. I've learned everything by just doing it. And so there's always been this thing in the back of my head, not anymore, but there was always for a long time this thing in the back of my head that, like, yeah, but like, I don't know the right way to do this because I haven't, I don't know. So I would say, like, you do the great work of demystification, I would say, and
Oh, thank
everything is
you.
just like, oh, this is actually very straightforward. I can just do this is just do the work.
I'm glad it resonates
That's
with you.
great.
'Cause I haven't gone to film school either. Still up in the air, maybe in the future, but as of now, I have not gone. So I like to approach our content strategy from like, okay, well, what do I actually need to know when I'm putting a film together, either in pre-production or on set or editing? Some blogs out there focus on maybe one of those things. Like Premium Beat is an amazing blog, but I know they're mostly focused on post. No, film school is great too, but there are a lot of industry stuff and maybe like set stuff. So we just want to be, okay, like what do I actually need to know for finding a location or for making a budget or breaking down a script? So I'm so glad that resonates with you.
And it makes it easier to do it over and over again, which is really what you need to be doing, is you need to be going up and getting your reps in and failing a lot while you have the opportunity to fail on
For sure.
with less people seeing you fail.
Yep. And that's what shorts are for, right?
I mean,
Not
I
saying
plenty
Sunday
are
dinner
still
was a failure
public.
by any
No, no,
means,
no,
but
not that. But I think there's like, I can't tell you how many bad things I've made that like it doesn't bother me because they've enabled me to make good things, and so it's the only way I can be proud of the good things.
What advice would you give to filmmakers or producers out there?
That would be good advice, I think, is like don't be afraid to fail, but also find the people that sort of either think the way that you do and you know that you'll get along with them, or think differently than you do. This short that I'm about to release now is something that I specifically did because my friend, who I really admired his work, and the script is something I never could have written on my own. It was just like so outside of something that it was in my wheelhouse. So that was specifically why I kind of tried to lean into it and make it, because it's something that I love as a fan, but not something I could do on my own. So I think finding people that are sort of on the same exact same wavelength or a complementary wavelength, and really leaning into working with as many different people as possible and being helpful to those people so that you can build up a network of people that you trust and that can trust you. And you can really enjoy the process. Some people say it's like the whole, like, it's not the destination, it's the journey. I don't really feel that way. I think the whole thing is the process. Like, there is no journey and destination. If you're doing the thing, you did the, you're a producer. If you're producing, like, you didn't. So you have to be able to enjoy and sink your teeth into the entire thing. Like, a lawyer is a lawyer. You're not like gonna become a lawyer if you only are good at or enjoy being in a trial in a courtroom. That's like 1% of the job. And so I think you have to, like, don't be an actor if you don't like going on auditions.
That's really good advice,
That's
I
part
think,
of
yeah.
being an actor.
Because you're kind of glamorizing the end result as opposed to liking the whole process like you're talking about,
And the
and
only
that's super important.
difference is it's what people in the public see. Like, it doesn't make it not your job because people don't see it.
Exactly. Awesome, Darren. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show again to speak with us. Could you
Anytime.
plug your social media channels
Sure.
for listeners out there?
You can find me, I'm Darren D. Miller on Twitter. That's probably the best place to find me. And I think my bio has a link to the Big Mischief.
Awesome.
That's the best place to go.
Darren D. Miller on Twitter. Great. And remember, everyone, the Winter 2021 contests are coming to a close in, by the time this episode comes out, a few days, less than 1 week. So be sure to get your entries in by March 30th. Go to thefilmfund.co/contests to submit. I want to thank everyone for listening and tuning in. Okay, hang on. I swear I'm getting better at this podcast thing, but I lost my spot in the little outline here. Check our social media channels at the Film Fund on Instagram, Simply Film Fund on Twitter. We can give prizes such as Kidsplay gift cards, Adobe Creative Cloud subscriptions. What else do we have? Expressway Cinema Rentals, weekend rental, 2 day rental. So check all of that out on the website at thefilmfund.co. Remember to check out our blog that Darren was praising us for a few minutes ago. Great filmmaking and producing tips. So check that out. Sign up for the newsletter. Follow us on social media to stay up to date on what's happening at the Film Fund. We also have an ebook, The Ultimate Guide to Pre-Production. Go to thefilmfund.co/resources. And we have merch as well, filmfund.co/merch or merchandise. I think they both work. Darren, thanks again. Thanks everyone for listening. Tune in
Thank
every
you.
Friday for new episodes, and we will talk to everyone later. Goodbye.